You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
We're here to tell you about our podcast, The Earth Station DCU. Join us every week as we discuss the DC Universe.
We talk everything DC, including comics, television, the cinematic universe, and so much more.
We look forward to bringing you some great reviews and discussions.
And don't forget,
read more comics.
Hello, and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am the host, The Monster, giving you probably one of the first time we're getting a bonus episode about Star Trek Discovery. Plus, we're going to be talking about The Orville, because since both franchises are dealing with science fiction and ships and space, we want to see about what are our thoughts about these two new series. And let's start off with The Orville. So since I already did the podcast about this, we haven't talked together since it has premiered, now three episodes.
Yeah, you've done your own podcast, and I did enjoy that.
Yeah.
This is Mr. Jean, by the way.
I'm sorry. I should introduce you, Mr. Jean.
Yeah, it's kind
Who of else is my co-host? No one. No one listens to my show except for you.
And Mom.
No, not even anymore. You lost a listener.
But anyway, The Orville. I don't know. The Orville is weird. It started like, what, 2 or 3 weeks before Discovery? And the ships are so clean. I don't like the ships are so clean, but it's a fine show. I honestly think about it as Galaxy Quest. What Galaxy Quest would have been, and yet that breaks the barriers of normal contemporary Star Trek, because if you're a Star Trek fan and you watch the show, something's just going to be a little off. Like, you know, the captain and first officer can't leave the bridge on the same away team.
I know. We know that's not what you're supposed to do. One of you have to stay. You don't have both seasoned officers leave the ship.
Now, again, we're three episodes in. I am enjoying it. I don't know, Monster, what your opinion is of the show. I like it. It's caught my interest. I like the creative team. I like Seth MacFarlane. Jon Favreau is executive producing. He directed the first episode. That's fine. There's also someone else that's powerful doing the show. I don't know. But I like it enough.
Yeah, and I think the problem lied for me, the expectation of what Seth MacFarlane can do, is the humor side that didn't seem like it was hitting. It didn't seem like that's the kind of humor that I expected. And we just talked about this briefly, the third episode with Bob, whatever that gentleman.
Bortus.
The blob thing.
Oh, the Norm MacDonald character.
The Norm MacDonald character.
That's hitting on the Cassidy Yates character.
Yeah, Dr. Finn.
And
then we see the gelatinous erect penis.
Your last ditch attempt to get the attention. Could have been an arm. Could have been just reaching out.
It could have been an arm. Not a penis.
If you're not paying attention or you're a child under 7, you're fine with that.
Right.
Otherwise, if you've gone through puberty training doing sex ed, you're like, wait.
Right. Or maybe he's pointing at something at the wall. Who knows? But that's...
He doesn't have lungs. He's been there 3 times in sick bay.
Right.
In the past week, yeah, I'm pretty sure.
But that was probably the most American Dad, Family Guy
moment.
American Guy, I said American Guy, Family Dad. I screwed it up.
It's fine.
Family Guy, American Dad.
You'll be fine.
It's late because we just finished recording.
And I've been drinking a little bit, but that's okay.
That was probably the most humor that we saw that's on par with what Seth would do. But prior to that, it's been very safe.
The thing for me about the show that's interesting to me is that it's just, it's a sci-fi Star Trek, loosely based on Star Trek parody show. The thing for me is it's frustrating for me being a Star Trek fan to see the breaks in protocol, but I have to remind myself they're not Starfleet ships, they're Union ships, what have you. A different cast of characters, but there's so many parallels, so many painful parallels, like the introduction of the crew in the first episode, the conversation, the casual conversation, which is what holds the show together for me. It's Seth MacFarlane, modern day Seth MacFarlane, talking to a crew as if you're best friends. There's no protocol involved. There's no professionalism involved. Right. Your ex-wife is your XO, your first in command. But it's fine. Once you get past that, just have the adventures, you know, and give me a relatively good plot, which I think they've managed to do. So far.
The third episode, I think, is what I think won me to now want to watch this series ongoing. The second episode, it was kind of a step in the right direction, but again, my interest was not because I loved the episode. I just fell in love.
You're just infatuated with the women on board. I get that. Yeah, Catan, who like, oh my god! The thing is, Monty, in that episode, you essentially give command of the ship to Wesley Crusher. Wesley Crusher goes to war.
No, I would say Wesley Crusher because she is security. So I would say she's kind of not the Worf-ish.
Yes, but she goes to a higher figure on board.
Leave. I agree. And I didn't think, like, what? You don't have a way to call them on the phone?
And the structure of the ship, you just, like, I just go down a staircase and I run right into your cabin.
Right.
And you say, I'm sitting on my egg. Go away.
Right.
I have leave for this. And then you run back up the stairs. You have time for a shot of tequila.
Two shots.
And then you...
and then throw up in Mercer's office. Okay. It wasn't exactly ha-ha. That's funny.
It's not a perfect show.
No. And then the B
thing
story.
It's not a perfect show.
Right. The B story is the zoo thing, which I'm like, I've seen this too many times in other shows, and it's done poor. But the solution was give
brilliant.
Them the Cardassian shit.
I have to admit, their 10-minute endings on this show are consistently brilliant.
So that was really good.
No, it's not the Cardassians. It's, I think,
no, it was all the reality shows.
Yeah. And they're like, this is great.
We got how many hours of this? So that was the part of the zoo that I'm like, all right, fine. That makes sense. And that's what they're all compelled to watch.
I mean, the thing of it is, it's a relatively compelling cast. You're interested in seeing them. It's not offensive to you. It's enjoyable. And I don't mind watching a washed-up commander who's trying to earn his potential with his ex-wife who's trying to help him out.
Which she does. She was the one that said you should give him a second chance. And
we wouldn't give him a second chance if you didn't come along and try and save his ass. Like, all right.
So, that's going to come back and it's going to bite her in the ass because he'll find out somewhere in that season.
Oh, and she's freaking, she was Wonder Woman and Lady J.
I know. And then also, too, and as I mentioned that, well, we all talked about how Seth MacFarlane has this great sense of humor, but he also writes and directs and all the things, and he loves musicals. So I'm sure we'll have a musical season episode somewhere in the season, somewhere down the road.
I have a question for you, Monty.
Yeah.
Is Seth MacFarlane leading man material?
No. And that was the one thing that I said. I think that's one of the problems that I had about the series is that he's not that interesting of an actor.
I don't know. I mean, he did do A Million Ways to Die in the West.
In the West, which is not the way that I said it. I just said 8 Million Ways to Die. Like this podcast.
Twice. Three times, I think you said that.
Three times a lady.
Once. Twice.
But the point here is that I didn't like him in that movie, but he directed and think he wrote Ted because he wasn't in it.
But you didn't see him, right, exactly. Your first time you saw him on main screen, fine, he did some Enterprise episodes, but right. Yeah, Oscars, then maybe A Million Ways The Die in the West.
In the West.
I don't mind him. My fellow couch potato, Laurie, watched him. Like, so what do you think about him? He's okay. He's cute. Cute. Really. This man does the voice. I'm concerned about his schedule a little bit. You know, you're doing this show.
That doesn't take much to do voice recording.
Voice recording.
No. I think it's more of the fact that he's doing this new series. I mean, he's a little bit more involved in this than... I think that's the thing, is that everyone else who is still writing for that show, it's not because of him.
It's also, when they're also like Cherry Chachapachachapachata, whatever is on that, is executive producing on the Orville show.
Okay.
Well. But there's a lot of crossover.
Right. Well. But what I'm saying is that Seth wrote, I think, the third episode, and he also is going to be directing down the road. So when he does. The three aspects, not the four that I'm pointing at, the three aspects of starring.
There are four lights, Monty.
But when he's starring, directing, and writing, I think somewhere along the line that hampers his ability to get what he wants to be done properly. So, 10, writes, directs, good. When he's on Family Guy, you get to hear him. So maybe he writes an episode, but he is not the star.
Blue Harvest,
yeah,
fine. Empire Strikes Back, fine. The third movie, we ran out of jokes.
Right.
We're not even joking about this.
Even that's
even the
funny.
FedEx guy had a joke at this thing. We're not even lying about this. We were like, shit, it hit? Okay, what are we going to do?
You know how much money we wasted on that blue elephant? You know, just dancing around for no reason.
There's a sock puppet. Yeah, whatever.
So that's the kind of thing I'm like, I want to see that. But I think that's going to be the hard thing to do from week to week. Unless you figure out what's the proper balance, because I thought the humor was off with the last episode, which I loved the science fiction story aspect, but the humor, like when Bordas and his mate wanted to have some quiet time in that room, and they were telling off the alien that was in the room, it's like, we need to have this room. It's like, wow, you don't have to be a dick about it. And I'm like...
That casual conversation, though, is what makes it work.
That didn't work at all for me. Well, I thought they were just... It's just like you slapped it on there, and it was just like, I wish they could have done it a little bit better.
The show is based, in my opinion, on a Star Trek-ian premise, but what makes it work is the casual conversations that the crewmates have.
No, I know,
have.
But
if you don't do that, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I don't think...
You know, the whole, like, what are you drinking a beer? Yeah, it's before 9 in the morning. I want to make a good impression. That whole... Weird conversation that I don't get. I've had that conversation with friends.
I know.
And that's what makes it realistic. The whole, yeah, I that's, know. You know, I'm a little nervous. I'm just, you know, like, what are you doing? It's my, I've done similar things.
I'm sure as time will go on, it will get better. So I'm optimistic about that.
Well, it's
show.
On Fox, Monty. So, I mean, you know, Firefly didn't, you
look,
know.
It's Seth MacFarlane. Fox is licking his balls. Both of them.
God!
Because, you know, he helped save that organization from going bankrupt after the Simpsons.
He brought animation domination to be, yes.
So they're like, no, we're licking both. You like them both at the same time. Once on the left, then on the right, and then or a combination. However you want it, Seth, we will let you do it.
You get a happy ending.
Right.
No matter what.
Right. So that's where I'm just thinking.
Well, I'm Asian. I didn't like saying that. But go ahead.
As long as you're not giving the happy ending, who cares? So.
Okay, on the back. Just
right.
Not my face.
There you go. So moving on from the Orville, we have the parody or the original series that the Orville is trying to be based on. But the first episode that we saw. Really didn't do anything as far as heavy-handed with the story, in which like you had the gender reassignment in episode 3. But this is a war story in which the first contact, which is not really a first contact, but diplomatic relations kind of went off the railings really quick. And then that seems to be that's the story crux of... The Klingons are going to be the nemesis, the bad guys, because of this war that's been going on, because of what someone started. And everyone is blaming Burnham.
Klingons? Are they Klingons?
What are you talking about?
Yeah, that's my question to you. Klingons are not part of the Orville universe.
We're talking about Discovery.
Oh, God damn, you fucking click over.
If you listen to this podcast after the fact, you realize I did move on to Discovery, and you're just like three steps back.
I'm sorry, I was zoning.
Yes, you were, because you're tired. And you're sleepy. Get over it!
All right, so Klingons.
Off the starboard bow.
Oh, God. I was waiting for that to happen. during fucking Star Trek Discovery, I'm like, there's Klingons, sir. I'm like, on the starboard bow. On the starboard bow. Say it!
I couldn't even enjoy saying that during watching Discovery.
I wasn't drunk during Discovery. I was just...
Of all the times not to be.
No. You're drunk during, like, you know, when Donald Trump is president and he makes war with North Korea. You're drunk then. You're drunk when I...
Irma.
Irma, yeah. Irma's coming. But, like, you're drunk, like, 14 hours before it actually hits.
Right.
And then, like, 12 hours when it hits.
It still hasn't hit? Oh, fuck.
All right, so, sorry, Klingons.
Yeah, so... That seems to be a lot more of that focus that is going to be more action-oriented as opposed to issue-driven stories.
I have no idea. The thing about Star Trek Discovery for me is that it's a slow burn. The idea is like, wait for it, subscribe, and we'll tell you what happens next. Here's some compelling characters. Here's Michelle Yeoh saying interesting things, walking around in not a circle, but the Starfleet logo.
And you know what? You talked about this earlier before. You worried about her accent, and I think that was what was pissing me off.
Michelle Yeoh's accent?
Yes. I love Michelle Yeoh, but I think her accent...
She will kick your ass when you
take this. I know. I've seen that
Bond
movie. I saw that Bond movie, and then the Crouching Tigers and Dragons.
Okay, James Bond is dead. I have to do my monologue to someone. It's you, Michelle Yeoh. Yeah. So, yes.
But... do you remember in Voyager, the test screen or the test shot of Gwyneth?
Gwyneth Bajoli, right, yeah.
And how wouldn't,
just
uncomfortable,
God.
Delivering the lines that when...
She was so tense.
Yeah, and it didn't feel like anything was legit. Nothing was coming through, even though she has...
Don't forget
done,
I'm Asian. Go ahead, say what you're going to say about Michelle Yeoh.
Well, I'm
Asian. Go ahead,
shut
say it.
The fuck up. What I'm saying is that... She's a competent and a wonderful movie actress, but coming over to TV, it does not translate, considering all the technobabble that she had to deal with.
There is a lot of complex things she needs to say, but most of it is oriental, like, you know,
that's not
my husband.
Ancient Chinese secret. No, don't do that. We're not doing Calgon here.
But no, the thing is, I watched it, and I didn't have any... I thought I may have problems with it, but I didn't know what was going to happen during the show. Oh. It's very strange. I'm sorry I'm countering you, but
no, you
I don't mean
have
to.
Don't worry about that, Gene.
But the thing is, like,
I'll kick your ass tomorrow.
You'll be walking around a corner, and I'll just rojamboo you, Gene. It'll be fine. Wait, what's going to happen?
Don't worry.
No,
about
but
it.
I was fine with it. I did. I mean, again, the story. For me, of Star Trek Discovery / the Senju,
which
it's
is
weird.
Name. Yeah, because we kept
Senju, the restaurant down
the restaurant,
way. The
Japanese all you can eat. There's Senju.
So there's a restaurant all you can eat
Shinzon
in our area.
From Shinzon, Nemesis. And Shenzhou, the name of the ship, if we're pronouncing it correctly.
Shenzhou. Fine.
Whatever.
I'm sorry, fans. I'm on track. I'm just, you know, we forget things.
On Star Trek.
look, the thing is, I didn't mind it at all. I was happy with it. I believed that there was a 7-year contact. I believed that, you know what? Number one, sit in the fucking chair. Let's go for a walk, you and I. But Captain, we can't find anything. What's going on? Do you know when we left the idea? And the thing that was messed up to me was the idea, like, that they can't find us, you know. Let me just walk with our insignia for the show, which was it was pandering, I thought.
It was called Footprints.
Yeah, Footprints in the Sand. And yet, you know,
you tell only
during
one
the
track.
Most difficult times, you there's only one set of footprints. Ah, but I was carrying you. Jesus! Fine. And then the ship lands. I'm like, this ship can fucking land?
Yeah.
And just to pick us up, and it lands, and they just beam us up. It's not a big deal. I was like,
with all the sand blurring around.
Yeah.
Never
they
mind.
They can't see us.
They can filter that out.
If I walk our symbol, yeah, we'll be fine.
So here is my thing right off the bat, because I've seen this episode at least twice.
Wow. But you didn't recognize the details about the music?
No, no, because I was looking at other things.
It was so beautiful. And the alcohol bottle behind, like, okay, we're fucked. There's a bottle of wine in the wall. Break that open. Let's drink, because
the mission that they were on.
Peace?
No. Not
just give peace a chance.
No. The sack of whatever aliens that they needed water. And it talked about if we don't help them, the next 1,000 hours, they could be all dead because of the comet and radiation.
That was weird, too. That opening mission, I was like, wait.
Isn't that a violation?
You're violating the Prime Directive.
Right.
Right. Which I flashed back to the, I'm sorry, your least favorite Star Trek movie, the Into Darkness movie. We're like, we're just trying to help these people.
Right.
And yet we're not trying to alert Starfleet that we're doing this, but we're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, that's strange.
And they said, not that they didn't say it's the Prime Directive, it's the General First Order or
right,
something like that.
Right, but we don't want to break that rule. And you're like, wait, what? Yeah. So you're just recreationally just as
coming
an extracurricular activity.
Shoot down the well, break
yeah,
it
and,
open.
Yeah, and what's the setting for this? Well, I'm not a Vulcan, but I was raised by Vulcan, so I know this is the setting.
Yeah, I'm a little like, no, you're not
we'll
a Vulcan.
We'll nitpick it to death later.
I know.
I promise.
But that's one of the things like, hey, they did kind of violate right off the bat from the Prime Directive.
Well, they don't have warp technology, so really? If they don't see you, and they don't draw your ship, if you don't pull your ship in front of them, so they don't draw your ship into the sand.
No, that's if they were drinking wine, they're looking up, saying, oh, yeah, those are the ones that helped us, thanks. And then that's all. No. So right off the bat, I'm really not hating, or not liking the series, I should say, about Discovery. But that's a whole other issue. But when we look at the complexities of, can we do great science fiction stories? Or are we going to get the like the DS9 story arc with the war story going on?
We're supposed to connect it back to Orville, but that's fine. Yes, I'll take
no,
this.
No. But one thing is that, can Orville be like the Star Trek that we are used to? Or are we going to get Star Trek Discovery going into something that we haven't seen before that's going to be different and not the traditional Star Trek?
Mr. Redenbacher, I will remind you, sir, you were under oath. No. And the heat is on you to pop if you're... Yeah, that didn't work at all. That series...
Slurry. That's what you need in your soup. More slurry.
My point is, I guess the Orville is unpredictable.
Hmm.
I first episode, trailer trash.
Yes.
You've seen it before. Second episode, mild establishment. Third episode, heavy-handed, sci-fi-y. Not enough comedy. I don't know what to think about the show yet. But the thing that's interesting to me is, you've got me. I'll watch you to the end. Whether you tailspin into the sea, or you soar like an eagle, and you destroy whatever, mainstream.
Or whatever you're trying to go.
Yeah, but you're on Thursday nights at 9, so I don't know what that means.
In fairness?
Thursday nights at 8.
No, it's at 9 because Gotham is on.
And it's Gotham, season 4!
It's an awesome show. It's so damn
Bruce
good.
Bruce Wayne got so old. And seemed like, I'm like, wow, you are just, you're adults now. You're having sex, aren't you? I
no,
I don't know.
Not
with
yet.
Me? No, not Bruce.
Not yet. But it's really good. It's gotten to the point where...
Is he going to wear the Batman cowl?
He has things like it, but not there yet. No, it's we're not close to Batman yet. This is not even Batman Year One.
Batman 0.2. What?
He's just a man. He hasn't gotten the bat part yet, but he's getting there. But what I'm saying, everything else, all the villains are coming together and have really done well, like the Penguin and other characters like what's his name? Crane is coming to the forefront, a Scarecrow. So we get a lot of cool stuff coming to the forefront, because I think we're going to have maybe a couple more seasons of Gotham before we end it with Bruce becoming Batman. But right now, a lot of things that have been done since the very beginning of the first season is really paying off now.
So you're saying that everything is awesome. Everything is awesome when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when you're living the dream.
Where are my pants? Wow, what the hell? That didn't make him laugh like an elephant.
That was hard to do, Monty.
I'm sure it was. So it's a good lead-in for the Orville. I don't think Star Trek has any lead-in, since it's going to be all digital on a platform that it's on its own.
But I'm glad to have new programming.
Yeah.
I'm glad that actually the network shows... I mean, I've cut my cable.
When did you do that?
Huh?
When did you cut your cable?
Like a year and a half ago.
Okay.
My mom is the only one that watches things because she's a little old and I need to keep new programming coming in.
Right.
I just watch YouTube and Netflix, and thanks to you and our...
Yeah, the Hulu TV.
Hulu TV. That's all I do. I don't need anything else. And the first time I watched a network TV series on a live screen was...
Star Trek
Discovery. Before Doctor Who on BBC America. And that was the 10th Doctor's... No, well, the recent Doctor's first season.
Mm-hmm.
Capaldi.
Right.
Or Downton Abbey, which actually I watched on my computer. I don't watch a lot of live TV. I'm a modern person. I don't need to do that. But, you know, I don't mind it live, because there is the thing about being the first one when they strike the match.
Right.
Being there with the ceremony.
Hence why, you know, when I was pleasantly surprised to see the third episode, I'm like, this is really good. I was about to, literally in my notes, I'm typing saying, this series sucks, until I watched the third episode. I'm like, oh, let me stop.
You were right, though. The third episode, the first, second episode, I mean, sure, cute security ensign running downstairs. Bortus's quarters are just like right two stories below the bridge. You don't need to take an elevator down there. You just run the steps, run through his door. It's like, I'm sitting on my egg. Leave. She just leaves, goes upstairs, pukes on the thing. It's strange. But the thing to me that's interesting was that, I don't know. It's very convoluted. That was not my point. My point was, I forget, sorry.
That was it?
No, the point was something else.
No, you said something that I said about, I guess, a second or third episode of Orville.
You don't like it until that hits.
Yeah.
I mean, the Bortus thing, the Bortus sitting on his egg shots. She leaves. Bortus is like, get out. I can't do this. And yet that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
That ass shot. And then the weird thing is that it just hangs there. You're like, wait, what's going to happen next? Because then it just goes to her. That was a very strange narrative leap.
And
you're not sure what's going to happen in the next episode.
Right.
But it's all about Bortus' fucking egg.
And it continues. The storyline continues from the previous episode.
It was very poorly edited, though. That, like, you know, okay, we're safe. This isn't that. I'm going to betray the Union rules and go and get my captain. I'm going to be done if I do this. They get them. They get back to the ship. Like, you're fine. Don't worry. We'll take care of the Union. No, she countermanded orders. They said they were dead, and yet you got them back. And they're like, we're back now. It's fine. Don't worry about it. But then the Bortus twist to do that the next episode was very interesting.
Right.
So it was a cliffhanger-y thing, but you're like, you don't have to pick that up.
Right, exactly. It's not necessarily a standalone episode, but you can leave it as, I watched the second episode, and you're fine. But if you watch a third one, you kind of have to understand what had happened the previous. So that's the danger of having lingering story arcs from episode to episode, as opposed to Enterprise with Discovery, is that if you're doing this now, what, 15 episodes, which we thought was 17, you're doing the whole story arc and you really can't miss or jump into an episode in the middle of the series and pick it up.
But that's why when you make 100 episodes, that's why...
Syndication.
Syndication. That's exactly it. The thing is that if you do syndication, you can't do episodes like that. Yeah. Like Angel. You can't watch Angel in syndication because you have to follow in continuity.
Right. I mean, it's great when you do.
Yeah.
But you love it, but then you have to pay the price. You have to watch your daughter. So, all right. I think that'll be it for now because, again, we've just seen the beginnings of the Orville. We've seen the beginning of Star Trek Discovery. We got a whole season to catch up on both and to talk about it down the road.
Any hopes? Any aspirations? I have no idea what's going to happen. Again, Star Trek Discovery, I have to pay for that. And I want to do that. I do. Because I want to keep it on the air. I have no problem with that, but just the commercials.
I know. But I think the keeping it on the air is a different way of thinking about it. It's one thing about ratings, and we talked about this earlier. It's one thing about having a show that's on Friday nights and supporting it by watching it. It's another thing now that it's digital, and it's not so much ratings that it's a matter of numbers that they have of subscribers.
Well, it will turn into that.
No, but, I know.
But the question is that, you know, the networks don't get this excited about anything. And then it is about the numbers. But you know what? Is your $5.99 to $10.99 or whatever going to make that much of a difference? I have the money.
Again, it's not about the money. It's about...
the principle, I know. Mm-hmm. But if we let the principle go, if we can pay the money to keep it on the... I mean, it's not just one person. It is many one people.
I was going to say, I'm going to compare this to like the healthcare crisis.
Oh, go ahead, please.
I want... like healthcare for all. I want Star Trek for all. Not for some, not for those who can pay, not for a platform that they may not have a computer for, but to watch it on TV and to watch it for free. And I want that for all.
The problem with that theory, though, Monty, is the idea that to get that, you have to have a broader understanding and payment of the current citizenship to do that. It happened in Canada. It's happened in other parts of the world. The idea of socialized medicine, the idea of care for all, is costly.
No, I know. And everyone pays.
It's transactional. I am very happy that the Affordable Health Care Act has continued to go and that it won't die.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an amazing thing. That the Republicans have campaigned on that. And it's beside the point. The idea is like, it's the best way for things to go. It's not going to be easy. It's never easy. But if you want constant Star Trek, you have to pay for it a little bit. But the thing is, then you could get the nightmare, which you are now facing with the Star Wars universe, which honestly, monster, I'm not sure.
So you're saying Star Wars is socialized science fiction?
Well, I'm saying that the idea of having Star Wars every year.
I know.
Is too much of a good thing potentially. I don't want to see evil BB-8. I don't want to see Finn in a fucking Imperial costume. I mean, like, it's over merchandised. It's like what, 5 months till the movie comes out, and I'm already buying toys for this for a movie I haven't seen. Mm. And the evil BB-8 thing, and we're gonna get this every fucking year.
Right.
There's no respite. There's nothing that makes it special. Oh my God! The diecast toys last year were on sale, $29.99 debut. There were like 8 of them. All you know, Jen Erso, Chariot Inway, all these other characters, right? But then the problem is, after 8 months, you got to clear the shelves for the new stuff. So the toys dropped to like 50% off. So fine, then they're what? $15 each. But the thing is, they didn't sell then. Then they dropped to $5.99 each.
Right, the then, invisible hand theory.
In the closing months, I went to a Disney store, $5.99, buy one, get one free. And I would have bought it.
Did they get a free Riker?
No. But I didn't have space in my house. And they were all there. And I'm like, I can't do that. But I wanted to do it.
I know you
But
did.
It's not worth it. And I knew the values are only going to soar because fools like you don't have space in your homes.
Or if you be patient like I am, you buy it for a dime.
No, you don't.
No. Because
try and find them now, diecast figures.
Look, the problem lies is that now that we're getting Star Wars every year, the demand for Star Wars toys are going to be dropping.
True, but...
And hopefully the prices will drop because, like they did with Phantom Menace, they overproduce too much.
I'm going to tell you what it's like in the world. And believe me, I know this from experience, sir. It's about space.
Oh, I know. You don't have any.
You took my toys. I gave them to you. You keep them safe. That was the agreement. You talked to your wife, and even though they're worthless, you're still keeping them in your garage. I know, for a better day.
Am I?
There will be no better day. The thing is, look, here's what it is. The toys, the Star Wars toys, Rogue One, let's say, for example. I know the future. I've seen it, all right? Buy it now when it's cheap.
Right.
It's never going to go up in value. It will never will unless you want it. Because, yes, true. They sold for, end price, let's say $5.99 each. They will never be that cheap again. You had to go to the store to get them that cheap.
Right.
Now the collectors have them. They're never going to send them to you for $5.99 each.
Well, that's depending if there is demand. And because there is only going to be just the one movie, that might be the increased value. Unlike the trilogy stuff, unlike other solo movies.
I've held on to things from Paramount. I've held on to those Next Generation figures.
What? For about
30 years now.
Yeah.
30 years. Next Generation from 1987 onward.
Is it Gloop?
No, it Playmates.
Kinda, Playmates, sorry. Yeah.
They're still worth nothing.
Yeah. Well.
Enjoy your collection.
I have more stuff at home.
Yeah, I know.
From other people. It's like, we're going to clear out this. Here, you can have it.
You're not going to put your kids through college with this stuff, sir.
Yeah, just not a really good one.
Miami Dade Community College. Enjoy the 13th grade, kids.
Wait a minute, I can only afford the admission. Forget it. We're tired.
Oh, but the thing is, again, those the beautiful figures. But if you want them, you're going to pay through the nose. At least double the price from whoever paid for them if they got them during that price. Doesn't matter. Not important.
Right.
But the thing that that hurts me is that it's art.
I know. But in all fairness, your art is all over the place. And if you had more room, you would have even more stuff that still won't be able to see. So it's another thing to to do. Like, I would love, you probably will be able to do this more so than I can, a whole room that's properly displayed.
A dream.
It's an impossible dream to fight that unbeatable foe to get all your stuff out of the packages.
I can do it.
I'm sure you can. So, but I think we're done for tonight. And so we talked about the Orville, which has gone better. Not great, but it's gotten better. We still are early in our decisions about what's going on with Star Trek Discovery or how it's going to go in the future. But nonetheless, we have a lot of great content for us to discuss over the next couple of months to keep us entertained.
And we have wonderful September releases. We have many films coming out.
Yeah, we still have to watch The Kingsman. We have...
It...
Maybe on
Ninjago,
DVD.
Lego Ninjago.
Only because Olivia Munn, I would want to watch it.
But there's a cat involved.
I don't care.
Pussy's involved.
Stop it. We also have Thor Ragnarok. We have Blade Runner coming out.
That's September.
And Justice League. And of course, Star Wars Last Jedi. The problem lies, because of Irma and kind of catching up, everything is all screwed up. I had a schedule since the beginning that I was trying to keep, and stuff gets in the way, but we're going to get close, if I keep my fingers crossed, close to producing 100 episodes within this 1 year. So all the previous years that we've been kind of inconsistent with episodes maybe once or twice a month, or maybe less than 50 or 15 per year, we've been doing a lot more episodes per year for this year. So I'm really happy about our productivity.
That's you, Monster. But I would make you a promise, listeners out there, if you find us, Monty will make any origami sculpture.
That origami has left the train.
What?
I offered anyone listening to my earlier podcast, you like the origami on my Instagram.
He can't make the
No one goes to my Instagram for Blade Runner. No one emails me. No one listens to my show. So, fuck you all. I'm not doing any origami.
Do not offend the... No listeners?
Exactly. What are you going to say to me in the no emails that I'm going to get from them?
Monty, do not offend the silence.
What?
Do not offend the silence.
I wrote it down.
Oh, my God, look, there's a silence thing.
What was that over there?
Oh, my God, Monty, look, there's a silence thing.
So that train has left. I cannot do any more origami. So I'm going to leave it at that. So, Gene, thank you very much for doing this special bonus episode that I never got to really do for anyone else but you. So,
an honor, sir. Thank you.
All right. So thank you very much for listening to me and to White. I was getting there until you stopped me from getting there. But now I'm going to have to start over again thanks to you. Gene.
You'll edit this out.
No, I won't. I want everyone to hear this
shit.
Yeah,
you fucking bastard. All
right, so email me if you want to at monstersciflyshow@gmail.com. Follow me on the various social networks. And don't ask me for origami because I'm not going to do it anymore. And thank you for listening to me and Mr. Gene and to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. It's sci-fi from a certain point of view. Happy Gene.
Yeah, I'm happy. Very happy. Thank you.
Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.